We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Hello, everyone. I'm Lisa Schmucke. I'm the founder of EdWeb, and I am so delighted to welcome our presentation today from the Congressional Medal of Honor Foundation. EdWeb is really honored to be able to host interviews with the recipients of the Medal of Honor and bring those interviews to get to students around the country and their teachers so students can learn about the qualities of courage and sacrifice and also how those qualities relate to their own lives. So let me introduce our guest today. So we have General Patrick Brady, who is a recipient of the Medal of Honor for his service in Vietnam. And he's going to be interviewed by Kathy Ellers Metcalf, who's the Vice President of Education for the Congressional Medal of Honor Foundation. So we're so glad to have so many teachers and students today. We're going to bring up a poll just to begin and get a little bit of a sense of everybody who's joining us today. So if you would just click the little button that represents if you are a teacher attending with your class and what level your students are. Great. Wonderful tool for us to gauge a little bit more about the audience. So if you are a teacher with your class, just tell us what level you are. Wonderful. It looks like most of the classes joining today are elementary, but also middle school, high school, a little bit of college, and a few others. If there's other, you can post in the chat and let us know a little bit more about your class. That would be great. From the VA, fantastic. The chat is a nice way for you to post questions or let us know a little bit more about where you're from. Melbourne, Australia, wonderful. Okay, I think we can close the poll now. We've got a good sense of everyone. And I'm gonna turn this over to Kathy Metcalf and enjoy listening to the interview myself. So thank you very much, Kathy, and General Brady.
Thank you, Lisa. Welcome students and teachers and all of you who are joining us today. I want to go over a few things. The purpose of this webinar is to give students specifically an opportunity to interact with General Brady. We only have 71 living Medal of Honor recipients, and so no matter how many school visits they do, we can't get out there to all of you. This is a way to bring you to us. So thank you for joining us. Teachers, thank you for signing up and getting your classes here with us. We're doing things, if you've been with us for previous webinars, you'll see that the format looks a little different today because for the first time we're trying including on the screen one classroom. We can only do one classroom at a time, but joining us today is Mr. Jason Robbins' class from Steel Canyon High School in San Diego, California. Hi, guys. Thank you for joining us. We're here in Texas, the home of near where the Bradys live, and so we thank you for being here. And so we've got the country pretty well represented. I've already got people signing in from South Dakota, Virginia, New York, Iowa, Alabama, Arkansas, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Arizona. So, and I know that more people are signing on. So note that you have a nationwide audience today.
Good.
So students who are listening and watching but not featured on the screen, you still are welcome to send in your questions. We will be gathering those questions as they come in, but they may be presented by the students in Mr. Robbins' classroom so that we have a live conversation going between General Brady and the students. So that's how it's going to work. I'm going to kick off the conversation and then we'll start entertaining questions. We are going to assume that the students who are here with us today have already read your citation and have viewed your living history, so they should know why you were awarded the Medal of Honor. They certainly know that you're a helicopter pilot. So let's start with what got you ready for that day for which you were awarded the Medal of Honor. How did you end up becoming a helicopter pilot?
Well, I think from a very early age, I always wanted to fly. And in the military, you have to apply for different schools. And so I applied for any school that would pay me more money. That was what I was, because I was married and had children. And flight school did that, so I applied for flight school. As I said, I had my first flight when for a birthday present when I was about 12 years old, about 20 minutes. Flying will add an extra dimension of beauty to your life, and I always wanted to fly.
So now, I know that you went to a lot of different schools when you were a child, mm-hmm. and it seems to me that getting an opportunity to fly at the age of 12, that's a pretty elite opportunity. I assume also it was fixed wing. How did you come upon that opportunity?
It was a fixed wing. It was a birthday present. And this very nice man bought me about 15 minutes, I think, of the equivalent of an L-19 stick. Really ancient fixed-wing aircraft, and that was my birthday present.
Did that then inspire you to want to go into the service as a means to be a pilot?
No. I never wanted to go in the service.
You didn't?
No, I didn't.
You just spent a career there.
No. I came out of high school, out of an all-boys Catholic high school run by the Christian Brothers of Ireland. Pretty strict group, and I had an opportunity to go to different universities to play football, but at the time I was stalking this foxy chick.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And she's here with us now.
Yes.
And so she was going to another university, and that university did not have a football team. So I got a little dilemma here. I go play football, I'm probably not that good, or I follow the chick. So I chose the chick. And when I got to school, it didn't have a football team, but it had ROTC, which was mandatory. And so I had no choice.
Oh.
And I didn't do very well, but eventually got married the foxy chick.
Uh-huh.
And then I had to go in. I had to go in the military.
To fulfill your obligation to the
Well, in those days, everybody served. Everybody served. Mm-hmm. So you had no choice. I go in as an officer. I go in as an enlisted guy. I married. I don't want to be in a barracks with a bunch of guys. I make more money as a lieutenant. So I had a little trouble, but I got through ROTC, and it's probably the best thing that ever happened to me.
Probably better for your knees than playing football, too.
Yes.
And yeah. I want to recognize that Steel Canyon High School was California State Division III football champions this year. So congratulations, guys. Other students who are writing in, you feel free to throw us your school name and we'll recognize those that we can. At this point, I think we're ready to start hearing some questions from students. So Mr. Robbins' class, if you have a question ready for us, you want to go ahead?
What has been the most rewarding part of wearing the medal?
Well, I think what we're doing right here, right now, is one of the most rewarding things we do. It gives us access to young people like you. Hopefully we can pass lessons on to you that help you avoid some of the mistakes that we made. But the medal in and of itself is a symbol. But it gives us access to a lot of things that we would not otherwise have access to. And so we use it, those of us in the Medal of Honor Society, use the medal as much as we can to help young people. You know, for the teachers out there, the thing that sticks with me about symbols is, symbol is from the Greek word which means half token, which when joined with the other half token represents something above and beyond itself. The American flag, for example, the other half token of the flag is the Constitution, Declaration. You burn the American flag, you're burning our Constitution and the Declaration. The medal, the other half token of the medal, is courage, sacrifice, patriotism. Those things that they try to teach you folks through our character development program. So it's a symbol, and it provides access, and I get to spend time with beautiful young people like you.
Thank you. Do we have another question from the students?
How did you adjust to having to move to so many different schools as a kid?
Yeah, you know, I didn't like it. I would make friends, and then I think I went to 10 different schools the first 9 years of my schooling. By the time I was in the ninth grade, I had been in 10 different schools all over the place. And so it was probably good for me in some ways, but I sure didn't like it. Now, on the other hand, in the military, you move a lot. My children moved a lot, and it didn't bother them. They were always excited to go to the next place, to make new friends, and to start all over. And so that made it very easy in the military for me to travel. But for myself as a young kid, I didn't like it.
But on that point, your kids had the stability of your family.
Yeah.
Whereas you growing up did not have that family support, did you?
No, I was pretty much on my own from the time I was 13 years old. The Christian Brothers of Ireland kind of took me in and kind of raised me. Great teaching organization, great leadership among, in fact, some of the finest leaders that I've ever met in my life were Christian Brothers. They were all men, they were athletes, they were great scholars, students. And so that was the first great thing that happened to me. Probably the second great thing was going to the military.
So you did end up with great role models, just yes. Not, you didn't have that family stability there. So you still were able to find other ways to get the support you needed.
Exactly. That's very true. And I think, and that's another way, you know, every one of us, I think at some point in our life has met someone who was an inspiration to us, a teacher, a coach, a parent, you know, the local policeman in the block, somebody who we could look up to was kind of an inspiration to us. All children need that. And so it's very important. I was very lucky that I had the Christian Brothers and then the military, as much as I didn't like it. Tremendous leaders that I found in the military, absolutely outstanding guys like Schwarzkopf, Powell, people that I served with, Fred Wyan, Chief of Staff of the Army. So that kind of rubbed off on me. And I thought, as I looked around, didn't like it, but I looked around, I said, you know, I'd like to grow up and be like these guys.
Great. So we don't always like what's good for us, but it's still good for us.
You bet.
So while you were talking, I noticed a question pop up that usually I wait until somebody sends these to me directly, but I think this is a good point for us to include in as a basis for this whole, the rest of this webinar. Someone asked if there's a core value that Medal of Honor recipients share. And I want to point out that the Medal of Honor Character Development Program is based on the six values that Medal of Honor recipients selected, including General Brady. They selected these values, and those values are courage and commitment, sacrifice, integrity, citizenship, and patriotism. So those are the ones that our program specifically focuses on. But those of you who have a set of school values, you'll find that many of these are woven together, and that if you extrapolate from integrity, you will probably find that the other values that your schools recognize, such as respect or honor or honesty. So keep that in mind as we go on through this, the rest of the webinar. Mr. Robbins' class, do you have another question for us?
So nowadays you need your bachelor's degree to fly. Do you get your bachelor's degree?
No. You don't have to have a bachelor's degree. In the Army, as a matter of fact, one of my grandsons now is applying for Warrant Officer Aviation Program. You can, unless something has changed, you can go into aviation in the military out of high school. In Vietnam, I had a bunch of teenage pilots. These kids, incredible group of pilots, by the way, but most of them, in fact, were just high school graduates.
I wouldn't suggest that you try to get a job with a commercial airliner without first going to college or being in the military. But yes, you can become a small plane pilot too, just by signing up for flight lessons.
Right? Yeah, you can take lessons. It's easy. It's probably expensive.
Yeah,
I could have never afforded
it. So is golf.
Golf.
Okay, good question though. Do we have another question from the students?
Yeah, right here. My name is Noel Thomas. I go by Young Boy Chocolate on Instagram. And my question for you is, what is the most funniest experience you had in the military?
That you can tell on national webinar.
Yeah, that's tricky. I think that the interface between military people is just so open and honest that There's no safe spaces. There's no political correctness. There's none of that stuff. When we communicate with each other, we're brothers and now sisters too. So to me, it's very, very humorous. But to pick out one instance, I could tell it to you, but I'm afraid I might get in trouble if it was the funniest thing I ever saw. But I'll think about that and see if it comes up during the rest of the thing here.
Okay. All right. Well, you'll probably find lots of humor as we go through this, because I think that among the various things that got you through your time in the military, wasn't a sense of humor one of them?
Yes, absolutely. The military people really do have, and military humor is funny.
If not always appropriate.
Not always appropriate. Absolutely.
All right. Students, got another question? Maybe not a trick question this time?
What advice do you have for a classroom of students about to graduate?
Oh, advice for students who are about to graduate from high school. Do you have any particular advice?
Yeah, I would say that without going into the courage, sacrifice, all that stuff, I would say to have goals, to set goals, to set standards, to have milestones, to say by such and such a time, I will have done this, period, and then do it. And the sooner you can decide on what your life work will be, what you want to do with your life. In my lifetime, it was decided for me. You know, the military became my life work. It certainly wasn't my decision. I never would have made that decision, but it just turned out that way. So not all bad. But for you young people, focus on what you want to be, what kind of a life you want to have, and then start working towards that goal. And the sooner you decide on that, the better off you are. And then don't waver from it. The more you waffle around and go here and there and start this major, skip this one, that's not good. Hard to do. Hard to focus on just exactly what you want to do with your life. But I would say the bottom line, you ought to understand you can all be heroes. The bottom line is you want to be a good person. You want to contribute to your communities and just be a good person. That should be your ultimate goal.
You know, that was a great answer. And in that answer, you mentioned that your path was decided for you because of the times that we were in, and that once you joined JROTC, of course, then you had an obligation to the country, which lined up with Vietnam, and so it wasn't a time when you could walk away from that obligation at all. But I bet some of the young people who are watching today also feel like their lives are being chosen for them in some way, either because either young people, you respect your parents and they have said, go to college or else, or perhaps you have some kind of challenges that you need to overcome. Maybe you need to work to help support your family, or maybe you don't have the strengths in, this is speaking as somebody who left a pre-med major and majored in English because I got to a point where my chemistry was ahead of my math, where you might feel comfortable with the skills that you need to go into what you think is your dream job. But you made the best of it. Do you have anything to say about how to follow a path that may not have been what you thought you wanted and to make the best of it?
Yeah, that, you know, whatever you do, and some guy told me this once, I think we were pitching hay, and he said, whatever you do, do it the best you can. If you happen to be in a circumstance where you may be doing something you don't like, you still ought to do it the best that you can. And, you know, you have to get up in the morning. You have to do something that day. So why wouldn't you be at the beginning of the day, further ahead at the end than when you started? Why not go through that day and be a better person, have accomplished something? You got to live through that day. You might as well do something with it. And the same is true of your life. You know, at the end, I have seen some really tragic ends to people where they look back and they say, you know, I really made a mess out of my life. And it's such a tragic thing to say, but it's too late. The mess has been made. It's too late. And so for you young people, I would say, set a goal. Don't make a mess out of your life. It's up to you. You can't blame anybody else. And then set those standards, set those milestones, set those goals, and then do it.
I like that point about doing the best you can every day, because every day is a new start and you can change it every day, but it's got to start that day. That's great advice. Another question from the students. Does somebody else have one ready? Yes, sir.
So do you stay connected with members of your Vietnam unit, and how?
Oh, yes, absolutely. We just had, the guys in the unit just had a reunion in September at Branson. This was a 40-man detachment. My second tour, I was in a detachment of 40 soldiers. And to give you an idea of the quality of those guys, we had three aircraft flyable at any one time. And those 40 men in a 9.5-month period carried 21,000 patients. And they did that, suffered 26 Purple Hearts. That means out of the 40 men, 26 of them were shot, some more than once. And so we became very close. I think that, and you, those of you on your great football team, know what it's like to be with others in tough, stressful situations and to come through it. I think it brings people closer together. I know it does in combat. I know it does with soldiers. And so I'm very close to those guys. In fact, we have funds to take care of each other, to bury each other, to do those kinds of things, and from that 40-man detachment. And in fact, in a couple of weeks, we'll be getting together again here in San Antonio and you know, sit around and tell lies about the good old days.
So I want to make a point about the Medal of Honor. The Medal of Honor, generally, it's a combat award. It's the highest military award. And most Medal of Honor citations, including yours, start with the words, "for conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty." Now, many of those awards were given for battlefield actions that were offensive, but you were entirely in rescue missions.
Yeah.
So do you want to talk a little about that kind of service and sacrifice?
Well, the beautiful thing about the mission I had, now, you have to kill the enemy. So let's get that through our heads.
Yes.
And in fact, your father, Kathy's father, was a great, great World War II hero, also a Medal of Honor recipient, and one of my heroes. The World War II guys, in fact, were really the toughest generation. Not only the greatest, they were the toughest. But he answered a question one time about how it feels to kill someone. And he says, it wasn't as if I was killing someone, I was killing the enemy. And the enemy of our country, the enemy of everything we stand for, people who would take away all those things. Now, I was fortunate because I got to save lives. And I think that, and surgeons and policemen and different people like that have that same feeling, but there's nothing like the experience that you go through, where you're presented with a set of circumstances, weather, terrain, enemy, the different kinds of weapons that they had, and to overcome those obstacles and to get into an area and to load your helicopter with the wounded and then put them in the hands of a surgeon who will save their lives. You know, that's like a walk-off home run, like a 40-foot putt to win the Masters or something like that. It's just a great feeling after it's all over. It's a little stressful at the time, but after it's all over, it's just such a great feeling. So I was fortunate in my combat experience not to take lives, but to save lives. But that doesn't mean that what I was doing was any more important than what the guy was that was out there fighting the enemy.
For those of you who are in language arts classes out there, I would like to point out that General Brady is a master of the literary technique of understatement. It was a little stressful out there. We just got a question that said, did you have a fear before flying? And what advice do you have for those afraid to take a leap of faith?
Yeah, fear, of course, is an emotion. Courage is a decision. In my case, my faith was a substitute for fear. I never experienced fear in combat. Now, that's crazy because guys will tell you, apprehension, yes, absolutely. Apprehensive and very, very high level of concentration, but not fear. Fear is a terrible thing. And when you see, it's something we give to the enemy. It's not something we want to deal with in ourselves. but it can be debilitating. It will cause to happen that what caused it, if you can sort that out. So you do not want to ever become a subject of fear. Now, how do you become in faith? The only thing, you got to believe in something above and beyond yourself. You got to believe beyond the moment that there's something worth living and dying for. And if you don't have that in your life, I don't think you're going to be a courageous person. Courage, of course, is the essence of success. It's the only way we are all born equal. It's the key to success. You can have all the courage you want. You can't use it up. And in other ways, opportunity and abilities, you guys in that classroom are not equal, and you know it. But in the one way that counts, you are all equal, and that's in matters of courage. You can have all you want.
So the challenge then is acting upon one's courage.
Right. That's right.
We have got another question here before we go back to the classroom that asks, how did serving in the military in Vietnam build or shape who you are today? And I would actually like to add to that question, or do you feel like you were already pretty well shaped by the time you got into the military?
No. I was, I'm sure there's some guys in that classroom who were like me. I did not like to have anybody tell me what to do.
Really?
And, or how to do it. And I didn't take, I was undisciplined. I had no goals, really, except to get through the day and have as much fun as I could. And sports were everything to me. But no, the military puts discipline in your life. It puts order in your life. It puts hygiene, for God's sakes, clean. Keep clean and to take care of your body and physical and exercise and all those things. So it made me what I am, really, because if I'd have gone another route and not met that foxy chick and gone in the military, there's no telling where the hell I'd ended up.
So we are, by the way, having a little trouble with the microphone with San Diego right now, so I'm going to take over some questions for until they're back on with us. So in the meantime, thanks, guys, for sitting there and being part of this. One of our students asked how students their age and younger can begin to develop courage. Are we blocked, Noel? Video feed interrupted? Okay, great. So the question that just came in is, how can young students, they develop courage? Because I know that many of your children went into, you had a bunch of kids, and they went into the service.
Yeah.
So since you were involved with raising them,
yeah,
how did you build courage in your
kids?
I
think it's we ought not to just associate courage with combat. We ought not to just associate with the physical thing. Physical courage for a football team to win a game or a battle, but moral courage is the most important thing. That's what will change the world. And so there's courage in all three elements of our being, our mind, our soul, and our body. And you have to develop a balance between those three, and you have to be courageous in all of them. For example, in classroom, you have to have the courage to study, to do your homework, to listen. And physically, you got to take care of your body. Spiritually, if you don't have a spiritual part to you, I don't see how you can be very courageous, frankly, because I think that faith is the key to courage. And then you got to recognize what is courage, what is fear. You know, it's when you actually reach the end of the line and you just keep going. And that's the thing that I saw and was so impressive to me about young soldiers in combat. You reach a breaking point, but you don't break. And that's courage. And so you can see it in yourself. Some people have great courage in other parts of their humanity. They may be physically fearful, but intellectually they're very, very courageous. Spiritually, they're very courageous. So the key, I think, is to find balance in your humanity and to be courageous in all three parts of your being.
I like your point. And we actually heard a student say one time that courage, in a student's words, defining courage was not being brave, but going on when you're not feeling brave. And one of the things that I always tried to do with my classrooms, I spent a lot of time in classrooms as a teacher, is trying to convince students to have what you mentioned is the moral courage, the courage, what I refer to as the courage of your convictions. It's one thing to believe something. It's another thing to be able to carry on a discussion with your classmates, your especially your friends. Friends can be the scariest people when you're trying to share the courage of those convictions. And whatever those convictions are, whether it's about your family or your academics or what you want to do with your life, developing the courage to deal with that. And I know that that's your... Of the six values that we have for you, courage is the number one.
Courage and sacrifice and of course, patriotism. But courage, I think, is how these young people will become successful. But to me, as I said and keep saying, that the foundation of it is faith. I knew that if I got killed doing what I did in Vietnam, what better way to die? I mean, if you're going to die, you might as well die in a fruitful way, and saving lives is about as fruitful as it gets. So faith and sacrifice, that's another very important thing. And your capacity for sacrifice will be something that will determine whether or not you're a leader, whether or not you have the courage to have a successful life. You have to have a capacity for sacrifice, and that's a sacrifice without a bottom line. So courage, key to success. Sacrifice is actually the key to happiness. And the key to America's future is patriotism.
Excuse me. Since we're talking, we've talked a little about children and how they can build courage and such. I know that at least one of your daughters went into the service. Or two of them went into the service, right?
All of them did.
All of them did. And did that make you nervous when they went in?
Oh, God, yes. My youngest daughter was in the invasion of Iraq, and I was overseas at the time, and I couldn't get good information, and the media had all kinds of bad news about the invasion of Iraq, and my little girl's in that invasion, and I'm not there to take care of her. It drove me stark raving mad until I could find someone who could tell me, everything is fine. We're not running out of ammo. We're not being ambushed. And the operation, the battlefield operation is very successful. But she was in the invasion of Iraq. The other children served, but were never in combat.
That was Megan that was in
combat. That was Megan, yeah. She's the one who helped me write my book.
Right. And did she come back unharmed?
Yes. Yes, she did. She's a homeschooling mother in Vermont now with four children.
What a great background.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything that would better prepare you for raising children than being in combat.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Are we back live yet? Can we have Steel Canyon ask us another question? Is that doable, Noelle?
Great.
What are one of the life lessons you would want to pass on to your grandchildren?
Life lessons to my grandchildren? First of all, the first thing I'd have to do is make sure they listen to me. They don't pay much attention to me.
Yeah,
I'm just an old guy. It's the same thing that we've been talking about here. If you want to be successful in life, you've got to have the courage to be successful. All parts of your humanity, foundation of courage is faith. If you want to be happy in life, you've got to be able to sacrifice. And your capacity for sacrifice will determine whether or not you're a leader and just how happy you're going to be. And the other thing I would say, too, about happiness, very important that we are grateful. That all you students, all you young people there, many of you probably have never been around the world and seen how other people live. And you may not know how fortunate you are to live in this great country. And so that is a very, very important thing, that we are grateful for our parents, for our schools, for our teachers. I don't think you can be happy unless you are not grateful for the kind of life and the advantages that you have in your life. If you're upset about things, you're not going to be happy.
I think a lot of many of our students have families that are immigrants, this being a country built mainly upon immigration. And students ask your grandparents if you don't know. And those of you who have gone on some kind of mission style trip, for perhaps going to New Orleans to help with after Katrina, or going to Mexico to help build houses. I know San Diego's just across the border, that probably some of you kids have been there, and seeing how other people live in worse situations makes a huge difference, and probably here in the Houston area after the flooding as well.
Yeah.
So there are domestic examples of that as well.
Yeah. And another thing I would like for you to remember, and part of the lessons that we do, is, you know, America has no kings or queens, no dukes or duchesses, none of that stuff, but we do have a nobility, and our nobility is our veterans. And the veterans that give you what you have, you should respect them. You should realize that they are noble people, and they don't believe that they did America a favor by their service and sacrifice. And many of my friends have sacrificed a lot. Legs and arms and eyes, but they don't believe that they did America a favor by their service and sacrifice. They believe that God did them a favor by allowing them to be born in this great country. And that's why they're proud to serve.
One of the students sent in a question, and I would like them to ask it, but I'm not sure it's going to come up, so I'm going to supersede. And what are a great question. Who are your personal heroes? You mentioned my dad, so don't go back there, but I know you've got some others that are really, you've got some great stories.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I go to Pappy Coleman. Pappy was a medic. And this is another way to define a hero. The way, very important for young people not to be taken by celebrities. Celebrities may be someone, and I meet a lot of them, someone you might want to meet, but a hero is somebody you should want to be like. Now, Pappy Coleman was a medic with me in Vietnam, had incredible experiences in combat. In one action, he actually took a bullet right through his lips, and he's bleeding, and they're picking him up and asking him, "Pappy, are you all right?" And he says, "No, I'm good to go. I just kissed the bullet that had my name on it." He was with me in a minefield.
He was rode on the helicopter with you. He was your helicopter medic.
He was my helicopter medic on many missions. He stepped on a mine and blew him up in the air. I thought he was going to go through the blades. He landed. He was on fire a little bit. Put out the fire, back in the minefield, carried the patients back on the aircraft. Now, Pappy has got 3 Silver Stars, 3 Purple Hearts, probably helped rescue 3,500 wounded people. He's got 18 years. In those days, you had to have 20 years in order to get your pension. His family called. He quit the military to go home and take care of his family, his children, gave up all that. He's in the Aviation Hall of Fame. He could have been Sergeant Major of the Army, but he gave it all up for his family. Now, why is he a hero? Because of the Silver Stars? No, he's a hero because he's a good person. And there ought not to be anybody that you look to as a hero who is not also a good person. So that's one of the stories. And one of the great thrills of my life, I'm at home one night watching my beloved San Antonio Spurs kick Miami's butt in the finals of the NBA playoffs, become champion. The phone rings, and it's Pappy's wife, Rose. And she says, "Pappy's dying." Well, we knew he was in bad health, but I didn't think he was dying. And she says, "Ruined my whole night," said, "he wants you to take care of his funeral." And I thought, of course, of course. And I let me go back to the celebration. And so he died 2 hours later. And so it was my honor to make sure that Pappy got buried the way he wanted. And that was a trick, because he wanted to be buried in Turkey Creek, Kentucky. They don't speak English in Turkey Creek, Kentucky. And I had one hell of a time communicating with those people in Turkey Creek, Kentucky. But we got Pappy buried exactly the way he wanted, his grandson's uniform, who was in the military, and all honors, everything we could do on a hillside in Turkey Creek, Kentucky. So that's one of my stories that should help for you folks to define what a hero at least should be in your life.
Very good. Thank you. Do we have another question from Steel Canyon?
So what concerns do you have for our generation, and what are your what encourages?
Yeah, your generation, I don't know. I see all kinds of different examples as I go through the country and talk to young people. I worry that you're not really tough as they. One of the great thrills in my life was in the Medal of Honor Society. I knew World War I veterans. I knew World War II veterans. I knew Korean and Vietnam veterans, Desert Storm. I knew them all. So I've had a chance to look at them. And I just don't think I was as tough as the World War II guys. I'm not sure you guys out there are as tough as some of the veterans in our past war. So I worry about the things, and who knows what the truth is. You hear on television where they say you think you deserve this and that and the other. A lot of the kids I'm around don't act like that. But I do fear that America's getting soft.
I think some of that toughness that you're talking about, at least for the World War II guys, came out of growing up during the Depression, when they had no choice, when survival was primary. And many of the Medal of Honor recipients, Desmond Doss, who was just featured, they were farm boys. They oftentimes, not only did they work on farms, where now we tend to think of farms as the places that feed the country and the world, but then it was a matter of living on a farm because it fed your family and having to produce that. There was no going to the grocery store to get food. So I think maybe we're having to develop a different kind of toughness. So some of you kids may have heard it referred to in popular terms as grit, but the term grit has a sandiness about it that I think just sometimes means rough around the edges as opposed to really tough. But that's something they can get, right?
Yeah, no.
You don't have to work on a farm.
You know, one way I would say that you guys are tougher than we were is some of the stresses that you have in terms of your everyday life, I think, is more stressful than the lives of previous generations. So in an intellectual sense, emotional sense, you guys may be tougher than we were. Because I don't think we had, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I don't think that we had the same kind of stress that some of you people have had, and especially in some of the neighborhoods I've seen across America. So in some ways, your generation might be pretty tough.
So that great question there. Do we have another question from Steel Canyon? I know we have just a few minutes left with Steel Canyon before they have to go to a different class. So let's get their questions. Steel Canyon?
Yeah, Mr. General Brady, I have a question. Why did you have a hard time in the ROTC class? And in your bio, it said that you got knocked out. You got kicked out of it.
Yeah, I don't know how I let that one out. But,
no secrets.
But
it's the stress they feel in
their lives. Yeah, it's a true story. I joined ROTC, as I said, because I had to. It was mandatory for 2 years. Now, at the end of the 2 years, they told me I had to go to summer camp. And I told them, you know, I don't want to go to summer camp and go through that crap. So I just skipped and went to Alaska. Well, that was enough to get kicked out of ROTC. Now, talk about a person who is very important in your life. I came back a year or so later, and I was married by that time. And so I had to start getting serious about things. And so when I lined up to go through the line to register at Seattle University, there was a Major Snyder there. And as you come to the last table, the ROTC table, he says, you want back in ROTC? And I says, have you looked at my record? He says, I know all about your record. And so he said, I'm willing to give you another chance if you're willing to do it. So he did. I started advanced ROTC probably at the lowest rank of anybody in the history of ROTC. I was a private, and where other people were sergeants and officers. And I worked my way up. As a matter of fact, I became the president of Scabbard and Blade, which is kind of the number one guy in the program. And I was in who's who in American universities and whatever. But the point was that I was married. I had other people who were dependent on me. It was not just me ignoring authority and discipline. It was other people who were depending on me. And so I kind of got serious about life. But Major Snyder, that guy, had faith in me. And so I pray for him to this day.
Did he keep track of you while you were in JROTC?
No, this wasn't JROTC.
Or, I mean, the ROTC.
ROTC. Yeah. He, he guided me through the last 2 years of my college.
So he didn't just let you back in.
Oh,
he kept tabs on you.
Well, he asked me if I wanted to run for Scabbard and Bladen, which was a big deal in those days. And although that's not my favorite, my wife's favorite, I was also voted the ugliest man on campus, which is her favorite.
I find that hard to believe.
It's true.
Tough campus, boy.
The whole college.
Okay, you guys have another question for us there, Steel Canyon?
So, General Brady, was there any time where you were stationed somewhere besides Vietnam? Do you have any stories about that?
Oh, where were you stationed besides Vietnam?
Oh, the other beautiful thing about the military is that to fly, as I said, adds another dimension of beauty to your life. But to travel is an incredible education. And so I have served in Vietnam. I've served in Germany. I've served in Korea. I've served all over the world. And by the way, I was in Berlin when they built the wall. And it gave me an opportunity to see communism, you know, the other kinds of political systems that are out there. Communism is evil, socialism being a step to communism. And so I was just amazed as a young lieutenant to watch the people, the communists, build a wall around their own people and then shoot them off that wall. It just woke me up. I just could not believe it. Our maid, her parents were in the East behind the wall. She was not allowed to go to their funeral. Our babysitter was engaged to her fiance beyond the wall, and she never saw him again. So that kind of woke me up. I saw that same evil in Korea. I saw it in Vietnam, and I saw it in Russia. So the other thing, you know, this, you should be so happy with the system of government that we have here. We got some real wackos running it, but that doesn't mean that it isn't the best system in the world.
Yeah, you mentioned that that you saw that, and earlier you said that some things are worth fighting for and even dying for.
Yeah.
And I think that those examples that a lot of our kids today look at as ancient history or the stuff of movies, the fact that you witnessed that firsthand, that's an argument for getting out and seeing the world and how other people live. But also you had a colleague somewhere along the way who had a take on what was worth living in for, real value of sacrifice, and that was Webster Anderson.
Webster.
Would you tell us about Webster?
Yeah, Webster Anderson was an artillery sergeant, great, big, powerful black soldier. And he was on a mountaintop in Vietnam during a tropical storm. And a lot of the support he would have otherwise had was not available to him. The communists overran his position. The first wave, they pretty much took off both of his legs. The next attack, they threw a hand grenade in to Webster's position. He caught it, and when he was thrown it clear of his men, it pretty much took off his arm, but still he kept fighting. Now, I flew in that night and I picked up what was left of Webster and his wounded, and I took him to the hospital. And amazingly, they were able to save his life, but not two legs and not one arm. And he got the Medal of Honor for that action. So it's one of two cases, I think, where one Medal of Honor recipient was actually involved with another one. And we became very close. And we would go and talk to young people just like you. He had prosthesis. As I said, he was so powerful. They didn't have good ones in those days, but he could stand up. He could walk. His arm was a cane. And we would prop him up in front of the kids, and they would ask us questions. And he and I are in a school in Oklahoma one time, and this kid raised his hand and says, Mr. Anderson, knowing what you know now, that it would cost you two legs and one arm, would you do it over again? And old Webster raises his good hand and he says, kid, I only got one arm left, but my country can have it any time they want. Now, I'm sure those young people looking at this great black soldier for the first time realized what true patriotism is. And I've known many soldiers like Webster who would gladly give their life to provide a better life for young people like you.
That is a great example of things that are worth fighting for and the true nature of sacrifice. We are now at a point where we need to let classes change at Steel Canyon High School. So we're going to say thank you so much, students, for taking the time with us, for providing the questions, for giving us a real audience to look at instead of ourselves, which is what we usually do. And thank you, Mr. Robbins, for making it all work, handling the technical side of it. The rest of our audience.
What are they doing?
They're saying thank you and goodbye.
Yeah, and set some goals, guys and gals. Don't just wander out of there without any goals in your life.
So we're going to stay on the air for another 10 minutes here with the rest of our audience, and we hope that those of you who have to leave will come back and watch us on the archived version for the next 10 minutes. So thank you. So let's go on with some questions. We have a few more questions here. One of the things that came up was we got a chat, and usually, as I said at the beginning, I stick strictly with people who are students and then teachers. But we got a message that came in that says, "Great seeing and hearing you. Thank you for being tough on me as a young, immature captain in the 326th Med. I remember you calling me into your office and telling me I had a bad attitude and needed to get with the program or get out of the Army. That was a turning point and wake-up call to make the commitment. The rest is history. 32 years duty, active duty, and retiring as a colonel." That was from Edward Buffington. So you might want to say hello to Edward Buffington.
What a great soldier he was.
And he's listening today, listening and watching. So.
Ed, God bless you. It's good to hear from you. How's Brady doing? My namesake, one of his children was named Brady, and he was indeed a great soldier.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for that. Some of the questions that we have left, somebody asked, I like this question a lot. I think this could be fun. When is the last time you flew a helicopter? Not rode in one, but when you flew one, and do you miss it?
The last time I flew one was about 3 weeks ago.
Ah, really?
Yeah, I'm blessed to be able to go out to California, where they have a great tournament out there, where they Dave Stockton and some great pros have a golf tournament that raises money for veterans. And in conjunction with that, the police escort us, and so the police asked me to come out and sign books and stuff for them at their airfield. And I says, "I'll do it if you let me fly." And so, son of a gun, 2 years in a row now, I have gone out there. And very much first year was a two-engine Huey. I flew it a few weeks ago. It was just an H-model Huey like I flew in Vietnam. I flew it, you know, it's like.
So do you do this at March Air Force Base, or is this at the police grounds?
It's a police. Very close to the mountains. We flew up in the mountains. Mm-hmm. And the great thing was the guy let me have the controls. He wasn't messing with it. He probably knew he was with the greatest helicopter pilot that ever lived.
Yeah, well, we'll talk to Crandall later. that is what a great story that is. Somebody asked, "What are your favorite hobbies, or what do you do with your downtime? If you had any downtime, what do you like to do?"
This is golf is the only thing I have left. I used to be involved in a lot of sports. Played handball for many, many years, but you know, you get your body parts replaced, and it comes a point in time when all I got left is golf. I do love to get out and compete. I think the thing I miss most about athletics is that's one of the things that makes America great, that we are a very competitive people, also a very courageous people, and also a very compassionate people. And those three things, I think, go to make America the exceptional nation that it is. But we are a competitive people, and I love to compete.
That is great. We are almost out of time, and I'm going to this question might ask you to repeat some of what you've said, but I think it's a great place to end. and it was sent in ahead of time. Someone asked, why does the American flag mean so much to you today?
Well, the flag is, as I said, it's a symbol. And symbols are so important in American life. A ring, a wedding ring, is not just a piece of metal. The flag is not just a piece of cloth. As I said earlier, the other half token of the symbol, which is the flag, is the Constitution Declaration. It's been a shroud for the veterans' coffins. It's been the tissue for the widows of veterans. It means everything to a soldier. It's hard to explain, but any symbol causes a great emotional reaction among people. And there's no symbol in the world to compare with the American flag in terms of what it's done for a people, and in fact, what those people have done for the world in terms of the freedoms and opportunities that the American man, soldier, woman under that flag has done for history and for society and for the poor people of this world.
You know, I think, General Brady, that I love your talking about it as a symbol, because symbols only have value for people if they understand what that symbol means. So people who are not valuing or respecting the flag, to me, that reflects that maybe they don't understand the depth of that meaning. I know very few people, unless they're at the end of their wits with a marriage, who would not value greatly their wedding ring. I think that's a great example. And we have people, young people today, use symbols in so many ways, with tattoos, with piercings, with clothing and logos and things on their jackets. And those are all symbols. And if we think about how lightly we take some of those, but to not give those symbols with real depth, we have to understand them. And that's where what you guys are doing out there in school, teachers and students learning what those symbols mean and what they stand for and what sacrifices were made for them, the courage that was required to make those sacrifices and to build this country, that's what this is all about. Thank you so much for taking the time with us today. We need to get in a couple of wrap-up points here, so we're going to ask for the slides to come back up so we can finish up with our audience. A great thank you for the audience today for being with us and taking this time. To learn more about the Medal of Honor program, you can go to www.themedalofhonor.com. You can also watch General Brady's personal living history there. To get your certificate of continuing education, the directions are on the screen here. Those of you who are watching live, it will be mailed to you. Those of you who are watching afterwards need to take the quiz and then follow the directions that are up there as well. The Medal of Honor Foundation, you can request the character development program on a thumb drive free of charge, where you can also access the lesson plans on the website and learn more about Medal of Honor recipients, because General Brady's story, all the recipients are up there, not just those that are currently living, but we have the citations for all Medal of Honor recipients. And then you can also, teachers, you can sign up for a teacher training on how to use the program in your area, and that's a professional development day. You can also read about Medal of Honor news and events, and it looks like there are going to be a couple more Medals of Honor awarded coming up here, late awards from Vietnam, so you want to watch for that. Also, I'd like to announce that we have the Excellence in Character Education Award. This is the second year for that. Teachers, if you are using this program, the deadline is June 1st, so you will want to take a look at that. The award includes a $5,000 award that you may use for your school or you may use personally, and it includes a trip to an award ceremony that will involve meeting a Medal of Honor recipient, perhaps several Medal of Honor recipients. Okay, next webinar is next month, Tuesday, May 8th. That time, our team, Noelle and I, will be in Charlotte, North Carolina, where we will interview Kyle White, Medal of Honor recipient from Afghanistan, a 30-year-old young man who put his life on the line for his fellow soldiers. And so that will be an inspiring and wonderful time. And I've been with Kyle White at some school visits. We took him to an elementary school where he met with the pre-Ks through the third graders and then with the fourth through the sixth graders. And he is great with those kids. So teachers, especially those of you, we had a lot of elementary teachers on today. And you did a great job with all the teachers. And I know that Kyle would be okay with elementary kids too. So join us next month. The EdWeb community is up on edweb.net, so take a look at this and you can read more about the Medal of Honor program and all the webinars that EdWeb does. And thank you to the EdWeb team for making this possible today.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.